Love of Swimming is a podcast that celebrates the wonderfully diverse community of swimmers and fantastic swimming opportunities that exist on the Isle of Wight off the south coast of England. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Sandy Cicognani. In 2019, I started the group Outdoor Swimming Isle of Wight as I wanted to find people to swim with in the sea. Since then, I've been on an amazing swimming journey, meeting some wonderful people who share my passion for swimming. I founded a social enterprise to support and encourage people to swim in the sea, trained to be an open water coach, developed the concept of a sea cafe, and have brought the sport of longe cot, renamed sea hiking, to the place where I live. I'm part of the Outside Research Study Team based at Sussex University, looking at outdoor swimming as a nature-based social prescribing intervention for depression, and I work in the voluntary sector on the Isle of Wight. For the Love of Swimming is also the name of a series of community events that aim to share information and inspiration and to connect people through swimming. So if you're lucky enough to live on or visit the island, look out for these events coming soon. Follow us on all the usual social media channels and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast for more personal swimming stories. So today I'm with Patrick Yates. Welcome, Patrick, and thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Sandy. It's an honour.
Oh, that's very nice. Well, let's start with a few short questions. Perhaps you could just introduce yourself and tell me, what sort of swimmer are you?
My name is Patrick Yates, and I'm a recreational swimmer, I would say. Love the ocean for as long as I can remember. It's in the family. And yeah, just being in water of any kind, any time, that's my happy place.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Have you got a favourite stroke?
Yeah, lying down my back, staring at the sky would be a nice one. Just bobbing around. I can swim well, but I've never been interested in competitive swimming.
Right.
And I think that was probably because I had lessons when I was a kid. And I struggled with them. And then I kind of taught myself. And I think it was just more for fun than anything else.
Yeah. Okay, we might go back to that in another moment. But have you got a favourite place to swim currently? And then a favourite place that you've ever swum?
It's a great question. Our local is kind of Dunroman Beach near Tradewinds. And there's a little slipway there. And in summer, it's perfect when you get the tide right because you can just dive right in off the slipway and it's always pretty free. That's a beautiful spot. Other than that, I would say Woody Bay would be my favourite because, something just about the undercliff that's special.
Yeah. Excellent. And is there any one place that you've swum in the world that I might perhaps?
I swam with humpbacks in Tonga and that was unbelievable, really, really special, quite frightening, but really special. And just seeing those tropic places where you just see the blue, like that deep blue, just stretching out for as far as you can see underwater is, that's pretty amazing. Pretty magical.
Yeah, wonderful. Another couple of short ones, perhaps. Have you got a favorite piece of kit or what is your go-to?
Bodies. I just spend all my time in bodies if I could. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. And any favourite sort of pre or post swim feeding opportunities?
Yes, a coffee. Love coffee. And
are you particular about your coffee?
I am a bit of a increasingly so. Yeah. Not one for the filter. Yeah, smooth, flat white. Go to.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's go back to the beginning. So you said you had some lessons. Do you remember your first sort of swimming experiences? Or
yeah, as kids. My mother's mother was from Steeple Cove, and my nan, then my great nan, used to call her Nana Beach. She swam every day without fail.
So it's really in your family, isn't it?
Yeah, so we used to go there a lot. And then, we had lessons, but I think my sister did really well, but I didn't get on as well with them.
Which pool did you learn to swim in?
Medina. Yeah. I never really looked forward to them. I always got a bit nervous, got butterflies.
Right.
I had to swim in lessons. It's very foreign.
Was that when they used to shout from the edge of the pool?
I remember I just remember coming out, getting a badge, I think it was 25 metres, and feeling really stoked. And then my brothers and my sisters were like, you just got pulled the whole way by the swimming teacher. They're like, that doesn't even count. I was like, oh. And then, yeah.
Are you the younger?
I am, yeah. I just wanted to grab the little floats at the bottom, really. That's all I wanted to do.
So after that, you just sort of taught yourself.
Yeah, I didn't think I grasped it. That's obviously why the swimming teacher probably did help. And yeah, just progressively, it's a way of life, really, for us. We all love the sea. Mm-hmm. And then just gradually, progressively taught myself strokes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we'd be like on holiday with a pool or somewhere in a villa, and I'd just be in there the whole time, just making games up and stuff like this. And always got a bit of a ribbing for my sisters. It's just making up silly games. But yeah, I just love being in the water.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Excellent. So you decided to go down the water route for your career then. You want to tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah. So my life's gone in different ways quite often. When I was 17, I always loved football. I got a job offer I did my coaching badges, which at the time I think was probably unusual for a young person. And then I got a job offer from Australia, which has always been somewhere that's really close to my heart and my family's heart. And then my mother got ill. So she got motor neurone disease.
Yeah.
And then I basically didn't go to Australia, and I ended up becoming a full-time carer. And so things kind of stopped. And then I cared for her till I was 21 and she passed. And then I remember when I was really young, a boy, I used to just read like atlases and books about flags and weird stuff, I guess. And yeah, and I always just wanted to go and see the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she passed, and I just thought, well, I'm going to go now. And then I booked a ticket to South Africa,
mm-hmm.
a plane ticket. And then I said to myself, I'm going to go and work with sharks. Because I thought it was like,
why sharks? Why sharks? That's a big question, actually. Why sharks?
Love sharks. deeply misunderstood.
Mm.
And just always been fascinated by them. So I was like, let's go and do this.
Do you remember what it was about sharks that kind of first captured your imagination?
I think the fear of them. I remember being a kid down at Steeple Cove, a guy into Margaret's and Dave's house. And then the wheelers obviously catch crab and stuff like that. And there'd be loads of crabs like upside down on the kitchen table, and the smell of it and the noise of it. And like looking at them and just being kind of freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember going swimming, being like, what's happening under my feet kind of thing, thinking, because on the Isle of Wight, obviously kind of wistly.
Like
that, unfortunately.
Well, that's quite good for some of us.
Yeah, sure. Seems for some. Yeah, I was kind of having a thought about, I wonder what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, as you know, you think your mind sets adrift and then you think maybe of sharks. And then I just started reading them for fun, fascinating.
Yeah.
Probably just the fear, actually, and going towards the fear, which I guess is unusual.
Right. I was going to say, is that something that goes generally in your life, facing the fear?
Yes. I've kind of always been the hardest on myself, I think. So I like a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a big challenge, the better, whether that's physical or mental.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going for bike rides with my sister and I, and go, she told me said about this the other day, and we'd get to the top of a hill and I'd faint. Just going all out. Yeah. I like a challenge.
Mm.
Yeah.
So off you went. You went to work with the sharks. What was that like?
Amazing. It was really cool. Went as a volunteer. I found a place in Hansby, which is south of Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
A great company called Marine Dynamics, and volunteered there, and then gradually just kind of did well, I guess. Was working there, and then met a guy called Pepe, who was kind of like the coordinator there. And he said, we just got chatting, and he said, I also work in Mexico. So if you'd like to come out there, then you could do that. And I was like, oh, that sounds amazing. And then I thought about it, and then, yeah, I did it. So I booked tickets to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went home and said hello to my brothers and sisters first, and then flew out to Mexico for the first time. To work with grey whales, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then stayed there.
How close do you get? How much swimming was involved? Were you watching them from a boat or were you getting there?
So we were in the cage. And in Mexico with the grey whales, you can actually touch them.
Right.
Yeah, one of the only populations of whales that were wild animals as well that seek out human touch. So you got this amazing little lagoon that's on the Isle of Wight, and this is where they come to breed and calf. And they're kind of protected there. There's no danger. And they come in and you go out in like a little rowboat, basically, about a 15-foot boat. And then you sit in the boat, really low sides.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
do you feel quite vulnerable in that position?
Yeah, usually vulnerable at first because you've got this 40-foot kind of behemoth next to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're really, sentient. And they're kind of totally aware of where you are and their space. So they'll like swish there. Kind of pet fins right next to the boat, but they won't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, the generation, the water generated from a fluke would come up to the side of the boat and would kind of rock the boat. And amazing, absolutely amazing. And then I worked there for a while and then became a guide. I love that, absolutely love that.
Did you?
Yeah, the best.
So do what you got, were you taking tourists around then?
Yeah, so it was a camp in Baja and people come for like 5 days. And it was quite expensive camp because of the activity is quite unusual.
Mm.
And there were some people. I remember we had the Prince of Monaco come, which was quite funny. And some other people, but lovely people, amazing people that run it. And just, we lived, basically there was this little island on the lagoon and it was protected UNESCO site. So when you arrive, you have to pack a lake. I have to pack up and then pack up. And then we'd have to rake at the end of the season. We'd have to rake the sand off footprints out of the sand, literally to the boat.
Crazy.
So you just kind of make these tents around and you're on this tent in front of the lagoon and you're in your tent at night and you can hear whales 20 feet away.
That's such like a dream. I have to say.
Yeah, it's incredible. Kind of a place you can't really think up.
Mm.
A special place.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And then you ended up back on the Isle of Wight. How did that happen?
The Isle of Wight. Yeah. So when the whales would migrate back up to Alaska, I would leave Mexico and travel for the rest of the year to different places. I was in Australia for a couple of years, New Zealand for a year, and then different places. And then came back from New Zealand for temporary to say hello.
Yeah.
I was going to fly back out to New Zealand. And then on my good friend's wedding, I met my now girlfriend. And it's funny because when I walked into the marquee, I saw my friend Ed and he said, he kind of knew this girl was coming because he knew the girl. I didn't know the girl. And he said, and I said, oh, congrats. And he said, nah, congrats to you, your future wife's in there. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah, sure. And I'm like, he went in. And no word of a lie, I saw the back of her and I thought, oh my goodness. And I'm pretty chatty. I'm pretty good at talking to people, but I couldn't say anything. I just went all quiet. And then I went to the bar and saw my friend there. And then she came over this way and I just couldn't say anything.
Oh, no.
That was very strange. But I met her and then didn't go back up to New Zealand.
So we're lucky to have you here on the island then.
Yeah, here I've stayed. So.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, just about, I mean, the reason I came across you really is because you started this new group in Sandown. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah.
What started that off?
Dip and Slip. So we started in January, which is just now 3 months, I guess. And since I've been back in the island, I've been teaching. I was a PE teacher for 6-7 years. And really great job. Really enjoyed making relationships with the children and people.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of great moments. But then I have a problem with my ankle. I have Achilles tendonitis. And it was very painful to work.
Mm.
So I would. And obviously being a PE teacher, kind of on your feet all day. And I would leave work and drive home and I would have to like pull over the car because the pain was too much and it just was difficult. And then I don't think I realized that during that time, it had taken a real impact on my mental health as well, physically in pain every day. And I didn't realize, because I've always been, like I said, a person that challenges him. So I was like, kind of, no, it's fine. You can, you know, get through this. When, you know, when my mother was ill and I was looking after her, I'd be like, yeah, it'd be fine. I can do it. I can always do it. And this and that. I remember being in Australia and I was assaulted on New Year's Eve. And I got my jaw broken and I had a job at the time, but obviously I couldn't talk. And so I lost my job and it was wide shut for about 6 months. Yeah. I was thinking, and then I obviously lost my job, so I lost my income and I had no safety net. So I was, for a while, I remember sleeping in some public toilets at Adelaide Caravan Park. And it was really low time. It was a really low time, but I still even then thought, no, it'd be fine. I can do it.
Yeah.
This would all be okay.
Yeah.
And then I think what I didn't realize is actually being at work and coming home and kind of having that kind of monotony, I guess, of life, you know, I gradually was kind of feeling low. And you just do things, like you come home and you're like, oh, we're going to see these people tonight, and they can't really be bothered. And you're all like, and that kind of chips away quite quickly without knowing. And then thinking, well, maybe something's going on here. So then things kind of came to a head. I was meant to have an operation for my ankle after about 5 years of being in pain.
Yeah.
And then the operation got postponed several times. And then I remember being at work one day. I just came back, just was told then I was at work, and then I went to, in the morning, went to the hospital. And the consultant said, oh, we don't want to do anything now. Come back in another 6 weeks because we want to do something else.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember thinking, when he said that to me, I think that was probably the straw. And I remember sitting there feeling desperately sad, thinking, okay, and just totally being winded. Every wind taken out of me. I went back to the car and I remember just staring at the windscreen, thinking, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to, you know, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then went back to work, I was on the computer trying to do some admin stuff. And then staring at the screen, just realized I'd just been staring at it for about probably 20 minutes without actually doing anything productive. I thought, I can't do this. I need, you know, this is no good. So I went to see my boss. And then I think she was in the meeting. I think she must have realized from the look of my face that it was serious. And then she came and talked to me and she said, well, are you okay? And then I think and then it all just kind of flashed.
Yeah. Okay. Did the tears come?
And I'm not an emotional guy. So and I think, especially in front of people.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember just thinking, oh, I don't know what's going on here. And then the more you do it, the more it happens, the more it shakes you and you feel like. And then, I remember saying to you, said, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't want to be here today. I don't want to, you know, teaching is great, but a large part of it is acting. So you're putting on your face every day. Is all everyone's issues are your issues and your issues aren't theirs. So, you know, what can we do for you? And, you know, how can we help you? And I think in teaching as well, and in any kind of service or like job, you put up with a lot of stuff. And I think there's kind of a grin and bear it, kind of laugh or you'll cry attitude. And I don't think that's always healthy.
No.
But you don't feel that you can really share other people's what I know. And yeah, she said, what do you want to do? I said, don't to be here today. She said, maybe go home and then call me tonight if you want to come back to work tomorrow. And then I did, and I said, I don't want to come back tomorrow. And then she said, maybe go and see someone. So then I made an appointment with a mental health nurse at the Bay Medical Practice, Rhianne, and went to see her. And from there, I kind of just went on this weird self-exploration time since about September now, which has been amazing and really different and not easy, but great. And so about December time, I was thinking, I've always wanted to set up a group that works work and you just don't have the time and you feel like, anyway. And then about December time, I was like, oh, I'm just going to do it. Why not?
Yeah.
I remember this my girlfriend's best friend's cousin was over from Australia and I met her for the first time. And we went to the coffee bubble and we went for a swim and it was winter, obviously December. And she's from Australia, so I was like, it's pretty cold. I was like, yeah, it's cold. I remember talking to her about when he set something up. She was like, she's from Adelaide. And she said, oh, we've got the big group in Adelaide just started. You should do it. You should go for it. And I was like, yeah, I will go for it. And then a couple of weeks later, I thought, let's just do it. Let's go for it. Why not? Nothing to lose. Kind of just be, put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And then we started Dip and Sip on January the 7th. I think it was our first swim. And I legitimately thought it would just be me. And maybe my girlfriend just didn't pity on me. And maybe someone else. If they put the degree on us. And yeah, we had 7 for our first swim. And then 3 months later, it's kind of just gone a bit crazy, really.
How did you have last week?
Last week was Varanian, which, you know, naturally on a Sunday morning puts people off. Is they kind of check the forecast the night before. I was like, oh, let's have a light to wear. But I think the week before that, even then we had quite a few. The week before that, my friend was there and he was beachside. So not in the water. And when you're in the water, it's kind of hard to see.
Yeah.
He was beachside and he thought there were about 60 odd dippers. About 20 on the shore, so about 80 people, which is crazy.
Yeah.
To have that in an English winter on a cold day. And even here, somewhere on the Isle of Wight, people still say they only swim in summer.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so it's gone. It's really, taken its own kind of path.
It really has, hasn't it? Yeah. People seem really keen to have that social connection, don't they, with people?
They do, and I think that's amazing. Like, I think that's so good. I think the benefits of sea swimming are enormous, but I think as much as all the scientific benefits and the way it can help things like heart disease and all that kind of stuff, as much as any of that, it's just, I think, just people being in touch with nature again in a really simple way, in a primal way, and being vulnerable, like just being in the sea, kind of turning up to it's not a club, I don't want to call it a club, this is not, but turning up to an event or a thing where you in itself is kind of out of your comfort zone sometimes. And I think to turn up to someone like that and then go in the sea and have all that kind of stuff that we have of society telling us what we should look like in our swimsuits and all that kind of rubbish. And then to like do it alongside people. But as soon as you go in the sea, everyone's in the same position. Everyone's vulnerable. Everyone's kind of guard is dropped. And you just look around. That's the biggest thing for me, is just looking around at people's faces and just seeing them in that moment. And there's really, when it's cold, there's really little else you can do but be in the moment.
Yeah.
You have to be in the moment. You have to calm yourself. You have to control your breathing. You have to kind of just be right there in that process. I think that's really, really valuable these days. Because there's not many moments where you get just to be still and in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's a real kind of intergenerational kind of group as well. You've got some really young people and older people. It's a really nice mixture as well.
We've got some nippers on the beach that just play with each other, which is awesome. 2 kids do that. And it's cool to have that kind of, you know, the sea, the beach, the ocean is not just for summer. Yeah, it's all year round. We can, you know, it's the island's largest common good. Let's make the most out of it. And, yeah, they're playing on the sand, digging bits and whatever. You got, you know, teenagers in there, you got 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, up to the, you know, seniors. And it's just really cool that you're mixing and kind of interacting as much as you want to with people that you might see on the street.
Yeah.
But not really have a conversation with. And I think everyone behind every door, obviously a lot's going on and you don't know that. But speaking to some of the people, you know, they've said how much that kind of, you know, I remember talking to one guy in the sea. He came on his own, which I just think is awesome. When other people doing stuff on their own, I love that. And he was like, you know, I just really needed this because life got in the way and then work got in the way and I wasn't really seeing anyone and wasn't seeing my friends enough. And he said, thank you so much for starting this. And so this is really kind of bit important to me and big to me.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's just in and of itself. You know, if there's one person in the week that looks forward to Sunday a little bit more than they did, and I remember feeling pretty rubbish on Sundays, that going back to work feeling, that going back to school feeling, that kind of never leaves you since you're a kid, that horrible Sunday of news. And if we can change somebody's feeling on Sunday from that, that'd be worth
it. Yeah. Wonderful. And do you think it was just simply word of mouth, or do you think the Instagram sort of had some part to play, or
I think how do you does, think it yeah. I don't know, because I didn't really invite anyone to it, the page. I didn't want to be that way. Like, if people like something, then they can like it. I don't want it. It wasn't necessary. So we just set up the page and then went, and then it kind of just, yeah, and then just started seeing these, this person's followed, this person's followed. I think it was like 500 now or something. And yeah, and they're kind of, and they really, they're people that are invested. They're people that, you know, they're not just following along in the darkness, you know what I mean? They're actually part of the people that come and interact, and that's so cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's just word of mouth. Like, a friend, she's a nurse up at the hospital, and she said she overheard some of her friends talking about going to this thing called Fitzit. She was like, oh yeah, I know that guy. And I was on a coffee course the other day, actually, and the guy there was like, he said, where are you from? And I said, oh, the San Diego Shackley, I think. And he said, oh, isn't there that different sit thing that's started up near you? And I was like, yeah, that's me. And he was like, no way. My wife really wants to come. And yeah, it just kind of, everyone seems to, everyone, but a lot of people seem to know about it.
Yeah.
And it's just cropping up in conversation.
Yeah.
And that's so cool.
Yeah. So you're meeting new people every week?
All the time. Every week's new people. We really want to get that balance of, hey, welcome. But also not like, well, tell me about yourself, because that's not what we want to do either.
Yeah.
If you want to come and just be on your own, awesome, great. No problem at all.
Yeah.
If you want to come and dip and then run off, you know, you do you. But if you want to just hang around and interact with people and chat, and there's people that will do that.
Yeah. I was going to say, have you thought about sort of, or how is there a balance between sort of feeling responsible for people and having to be there every week? Or I don't know, how does that work for you at the moment?
Yeah, I think there is that. And
because it is very informal. It's completely
informal. It's so interesting.
I think it's great.
I'm very that way inclined. I don't like to make people. But it's not like, that's why I don't call it a club. I don't want people to come and be like, oh, I can't come this week. Oh, no, that's not good. It's just whatever.
Yes.
If you want to come once, great. If you want to come and just watch, awesome. If you want to come and every week, fantastic. Like, no worries. And I think just having that kind of informal kind of thing, and obviously the guys at the Coffee Bubble, who I absolutely love, Jane and James, it's been a real, getting to know them throughout this period has been one of the highlights. They're just lovely people, and their vibe is very similar, I feel.
I was going to say, because I know when I went, they were giving free cake away. How did that come about?
Free cakes. I didn't even ask for it. It's mad.
I said there was no arm twisting in
there. None at all. She's just, you. I think when you meet some people, you're like, that's someone special.
Thank you for sticking with us. I hope you're enjoying this podcast. If you would like to be interviewed or know somebody that you think we ought to interview, please let us know.
I think she's just a lovely person. They both are. And she, you know, to have, I thought in my head, it would be great if we could go dip in and then we could come out and get a cafe. And in that spot, you've got a few cafes. Yeah. I thought, you know, everyone can just go to their own cafe, get whatever. And then I messaged her because we were going to swim next to it, and I didn't want to like be kind of intrusive. And then she was like, oh, sounds great. Let's do it or whatever. And then, yeah. And I was like, okay. So the first week she was like, I made some cakes. And I was like, you didn't have to do that. And now every week, basically, she makes these cakes and they're free and they're incredible. Like one of the other weeks she came, I saw her and she was like, I came down Saturday or something, dropped the cakes all over the floor. Getting out of the car, she's like, then I had to go home and make some more. I was like, well, if that was me, I'm like, there's no catch today, guys. I've dropped them all. I can't, you know, I'm not making them again. But yeah, she made them all again and she put them all out and they're free. And some people just watch, like, they don't come to dip and sit, but they like walk around and just take free cakes and just keep walking. But she's like, she doesn't even say anything to them. Yes. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And the coffee's great.
Yeah.
The hot chocolate, whatever you're into. Yeah, just, it's a real nice. Yeah, just brilliant. It's a great place.
Really nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. So what, anything new on the horizon? You're just carrying on with that?
I think some plans are for, they're not confirmed yet, but obviously I've never been in this position necessarily of having this much time out of work, which has been a blessing, because when does that happen, right? And Yeah, so I'm not sure what the future holds. I'm really pleased for Dip and Sip. Hopefully that one, in my head, that will run all year round. Yeah. I have these visions of summer where people just turn up and like they turn up early and they just stay. And they like, you know, just stay on the beach all day and then maybe some like summer nights where it's midweek or whatever. But I'm not protective of it.
No.
And say if went somewhere else and moved somewhere else, hopefully someone will carry on.
Yeah.
I'm just glad that I'm just pleased and I guess proud that in that moment where things weren't looking so good for myself, something good's come out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great. That's really good. I don't want to get into a negative vibe particularly, but
sure.
With swimming, and particularly in the sea, there are, people do have a lot of fears. There is a lot of danger there, if you like. Is there anything in particular that sort of frightens you about swimming and being in the sea?
No.
I mean, obviously, you're not that scared of sharks.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think a large part of it is just being sensible and just educating yourself just about water in general, what to look for, even from the shore. I remember I did my lifeguard training when I was a teenager as well. I remember watching this horrible video where they show you a pool for like 5 minutes and then underneath they clear out everything. And then there's this big float and underneath there was this kid under the float the whole time. I was thinking, oh my goodness, I do not want to do that. And I think things like that can be a bit, I remember when I was younger, my friend, we went for a swim at Orchard Bay. I won't say it, but she got in trouble with water and a rip I remember going in and getting her out of the rip and taking her back to shore.
Yeah.
I remember thinking then that was a pretty gnarly moment.
I was going to say, in case you can hear noises, we've got a little tortoise under the table. What's the tortoise's name?
Eugene. And he can't stop fiddling around and scratching his hat. He knows we're in it. Yeah. So no, not a lot worries me about being in the water. I think because I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people that come to Dip and Sip don't swim naturally anyway. Not even really in the summer, but they'll turn up and they'll come in with us because it's a communal thing and they're there for that, getting out of their comfort zone reason.
Yeah, because you were saying that there's something about pushing yourself and having a sense of vulnerability that's sort of lacking for a lot of people in life these days.
Totally. Yeah, I think it's really easy to kind of avoid those situations. Yeah.
I mean, I hear people saying, you know, is it 100% safe? And you go, well, no, that's the point. You know, it's like nothing is.
Absolutely. Life, is yeah. And
but some people still seem to expect that of things, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think as people put fences up all the time and they're trying to make their lives safe. And there's a lot of, you used to get that at work, there's a lot of kind of helicopter parenting or lawnmower parenting where they just come in and take their children out of situations or make it as easy as possible for their kids. And it's all...
I've never heard that term, lawnmower parenting.
Yeah, just taking down all those obstacles. And, and then when something does happen, not really know how to respond.
Yeah.
I remember reading about the Inuit people and how they raise their kids. And basically, they don't interfere unless there's immediate danger of death. Because there's so many dangers there, obviously. They can do it all the time. So unless they're going to fall in the water or drown or, you know, the predator's there, they won't interfere. They'll just let their child figure it out. I remember listening to a podcast as well about, in Europe, they're rebuilding all these big parks that we took down, obviously, for H&S. And they're making these, you know, really big parks and dangerous, like climbing frames and stuff, because that's...
That's how you know.
The attitude, you're only going to fall once, really. I think we're taking a lot of that away. And as adults, I guess you've grown into that as well and you want everything to be safe.
Yeah. I mean, that leads me on to one of my other questions I've put down is where do you think you get your resilience from? Because you've obviously picked yourself up a number of times throughout your life. Does that come from anywhere in particular, do you think? Like from being a carer at a young age, or did you have that before, do you think?
I think it's probably always been there instilled by my mum. I left when I was young. And my mother brought up four of us and she went back to school herself when we were young to be a nurse. And I think she would come in late at night and we were like kids, you know, five or whatever. There's 2 years between all of us. And then we'd have like cleaning teams, like purple team and green team. They'd have to clean the house. Like green would be upstairs, purple downstairs. We had to cook.
Why didn't I ever think of that?
All of that stuff, yeah. And I think from there, really, just having that example of someone working so hard and taking their responsibility kind of game to me, I guess. And then I just remember, yeah, just playing on my own quite a lot, being really close to my brothers and sisters, but I would just be outside because I was into football, no one else was. So I'd just be out there till it was dark. And I think just that resilience of playing and being on your own and having that example, just that really strong example of a strong woman doing whatever it took.
I think
that stands you in good stead.
Great. Just a couple more questions, if I may. Who would you say was your greatest influence, particularly with regards to the love of water and swimming, things like that?
That's such a good question. Do you know what? I don't know. I think love of swimming, I think knowing that it's in the bones and in the blood and just being influenced by wanting to be there. I think like on a day like today where it's sunny outside, which is nice, just wanting to be in those environments. And if you want to be in those environments, you know, people who always have these dreams of, oh, I'd love to grow up and stuff or whatever, or scuba. If you want to do those things, you need to go and do it. And if I want to be in the water, I've got to be in the water. I mean, so I guess no one in particular. Yeah, I don't know. You know, that's such a weird question. I never even
thought. It might come to you in the middle of the night.
It might. You know. Yeah, just being in the water and just being kids near the water, I think. Yeah, just gravitating towards it, I think.
Okay. And this podcast, as you know, is called For the Love of Swimming. Yeah. How would you summarize your love of swimming?
I think it means so much to me. The longest I've ever spent away from the ocean, I was working on a cattle farm in the outback in Australia. And I was there for 3 months, didn't see the ocean, only just saw, you know, the billabongs, whatever, and missing it massively. I think it's my compass point. I think I think just that thing of where you can get to the coast and look out and see nothing, that doesn't happen anywhere else. You know, even on the land, you'll see a tree in the distance, whatever, but here you literally just see nothing. And I think that's so important for the mind to like send thoughts out over the sea and not have them come back. And it just means a huge deal to me. And being in the water, there's no better feeling, I think. Yeah. Just having been in there since.
And you've been in today, which I haven't, so I'm slightly jealous.
Lovely little swim, bro. It's just great, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Patrick, for coming on the podcast and for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.